Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will. Adam, of course, is here. Norman Chan,
hello,
joining us as well. Today, well, first off, it's been a little while.
It has been a little while. Sorry about that.
No.
How are you doing?
We've been back in production.
So you're working.
We're working. We are shooting the show. And, you know, after a summer hiatus,
yeah,
it's always kind of hectic to get back into the full-time grind of the Mythbusters shooting schedule.
Coming back from summer break, and all of a sudden it's a real job, and you guys work all the time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, most TV shows shoot 8 months a year, and then they take like a break of 4 months.
Yeah.
We shoot 46 weeks a year.
Wow.
Now, the difference between us and most TV shows is that we keep relatively normal hours. We work 8:30 to 5:30. You know, I've never missed dinner with my kids. But, you know, because we are doing all the problem solving and all the on-screen writing and all the talking and moving in front of the camera, our brains get really mushy.
I can imagine.
After a few months.
Yeah, I can't imagine working the way you guys work and then, you know, trying to be normal human beings the rest of the time.
Oh, you know, I think we're both really good at sequestering the time we need to stay present with our families, which is the most important thing. You know, it's like work really hard, but be in your house when you're in your house. And both of us, I think, do that really quite well.
It makes sense.
And you find time to come here.
Yes. And that's, you know, that's also part of the sanity thing. It's funny. I was talking about this recently with somebody that, like, you think of when you have your shop, and a lot of guys have a shop, a lot of girls have a shop.
Yeah.
A lot of people have a shop in a couple where the other member of the couple does not.
Yeah.
And you end up probably through most of your life developing a kind of feeling as you go to your shop like you're stealing time.
Mm-hmm.
Because you never feel like you have enough time. And I've also had conflicts with many of my significant others over the amount of time I've spent in the shop. And I've had problems balancing my time here. However, there was a point at which my wife said, it has nothing to do with the amount of time you spent. She said, you can totally maintain a consciousness about what's going on in the family while you're there. It's the fact that, like, I would go and completely unplug and show up like this newborn baby with my brain totally out of it. And she was totally right. She's completely right. You know, when you're participating and you go and do the thing that you need to do for yourself, whether it's a walk of a couple miles a day or going to the shop to screw a couple of screws together, those are all the same types of meditation that keep you sane.
Yeah. It makes perfect sense.
That's what Steve Jobs did, right? He walked every day, walked a couple miles.
Did he?
And, yep, in those New Balance shoes, grass. Yeah, yeah.
I find that, you know, whenever we're having days in the shop on Mythbusters, I'm only like 6 minutes from the Mythbusters shop here and 2 minutes from my house. So I will buzz over here for lunch, spend 50 minutes doing stuff, and then buzz right back to Mythbusters. And just that little oscillation, maybe 3 days a week, is really, really nice.
Well, and one of the things that I've found, especially as I've gotten older, I've had less and less time, and less of that is my own time.
Yes.
And I have a lot of free time. I mean, let's not get this wrong. But the thing I find is that I get so focused on packing as much stuff as I can into that time that I don't ever have any time that's unscheduled, unstructured time is what an educator would call that, I guess.
Yes.
And I like that time that you're just walking from the car to the office, or, you know, from when you're on the train and just kind of sitting there zoning out and watching everybody else that's on the train, is time that the best stuff happens in my head.
It's totally true. And I've had recently, over the past few months, I've been spending more time here in the cave. I'm thinking of just calling it the cave.
I think I like the cave better.
The cave is better than the man cave.
Plato has his cave. Now Adam has his cave.
Man
no
cave.
Hemlock here.
I don't really care about the dichotomy of like men do one thing and women do the other. All that's bullshit. But man cave to me is a little too, I love Tim Allen, but it's a little too Tim Allen.
You know, they added it to the dictionary.
I got a lot of emails about it being added to Merriam-Webster, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Webster. school teacher. So I'm thinking just the cave. So
I like the cave.
I've been spending a lot more time in the cave recently. And a few weeks ago, I had this day where my wife was doing an architectural tour or something of Marin County, significant homes. And I had like 7 hours and I was just in here. And after about 2 hours, I actually ran out of stuff to do. And for me, I often think about something for weeks before I build it. So when I do, it's like right there. But I kind of like used up all the things I'd been thinking about. And I started looking around. I'm like, I don't know what to do. I actually went over to my house and took a bath and then came back. And I was like, this is awesome. I've reached a kind of a stasis with the cave so that I like...
Project Zero.
I'm current. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Some people use their personal space as a place they can take a book to read or something.
I have actually laid down and read
some. Okay, yeah. So you actually need to use this space for what it's meant to be.
Yeah.
Not just a workshop.
A sanctum sanctorum. Yeah. It's my Doc Savage secret hideout high atop the Empire State Building.
Very good. Do you want to talk about spoilers?
Let's talk about spoilers.
So when we were at Comic-Con, you let something slip in a super casual way.
Oh.
That I thought, oh shit, why would he do that? And then we talked about it a little bit. We all talked about it a little bit. And then Norm and I talked about it a little bit. And you said, I just finished reading the Django Unchained script.
Yes.
And I thought, why on earth would you spoil a Tarantino movie before it comes out? And this isn't, it's not like a special, it's something you download there. It's out there on the internet. Anybody can download it.
Why would I do that?
Why on earth would you do that?
I thought a lot about that.
I got to think you did. Yeah.
And I will tell you that. So I've read all of his scripts. Mm-hmm. Like I've watched all of the movies many, many times, and I've downloaded and bought the scripts and read through them post watching. And I found out you could download the Django script. I just immediately went out and did what it took to find it and download it. Put it on my computer, read the first couple of pages, saw that they gridded pretty close to what I had seen in the trailer.
Okay.
So, it was like the first thing you wonder is the script genuine? So I felt, oh, this is totally genuine. And it felt like a Tarantino script, right? And I got about 10 pages in, and then I didn't read anything for about probably 5 months. But it was always there. Like every time I opened Preview, mm-hmm. it was a PDF file. Every time I opened Preview, it would be there. And I'd see the lines and I'd like, well, maybe
so
not.
So talk about what's going through your head. Like,
well, what's going through my head is I'm not sure I want to spoil the script for myself. Do I want to read ahead? And then I kind of came to this conclusion that Tarantino is so important to me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on so many levels, he's an unbelievable regurgitator. Sounds kind of like a
remix. He remixes.
Yeah, even I think it's even yeah. And there's many ways to talk about it, but he's responding on so many levels to the culture that created him and 20th century film. And his films are so important to me on such a deep level that I thought, you know what, I would like to read this completed script and then see what he ended up with.
For the first time,
I want to actually see what, as I read this, see what I see in my head, see what, you know, there are things he writes about that where he just says, it's a sequence that feels like this. And I think, okay, I totally see something when he says that, but so, I wonder what he sees when he says
he
that.
He writes scripts very differently than maybe other screenwriters because he directs and... A lot of screenwriters, when they write scripts, they don't want to direct. They describe a scene, but they can't. You know, it's the director's job and the effects artist's job to fill in all the gaps outside of story and dialogue.
Yeah.
But Quentin Tarantino, because he directs what he writes, he can annotate.
There are times when the script feels like he's just making notes for himself. Mm-hmm. Like in here, I want to do a montage that does this, this, and this. And I've read a lot of my favorite writer's scripts, and everybody has their kind of own way to. And my favorite thing about screenplays is the way in which they break the fourth wall. They do it almost, it's part of the form that the fourth wall is always there. And then the writers even break that and talk to you. Like, you know, I don't even want to say there's a line in my head that's in the that's in Tarantino's script, but I've read other writers who have beautiful phrases that they say to you, the reader, while you're reading the script that's going to be directed.
Well, they try to evoke a state of mind
right. For
when the reader is reading, which is very different from when the viewer is viewing the movie, from the director is reading it,
exactly.
The producer's reading it. A script is a very different piece of text.
And so Tarantino also said that when he's writing, he writes very much, he's totally character-driven. So he creates his characters, then he knows them, he understands them, and he puts them in situations, and then he sees how they get out of them.
It's Stephen King has said much the same thing. He writes characters and then puts them in weird situations and sees what happens.
And also John Spleitz, the guy who wrote the Prometheus script before Damon Lindelof got his hands on it, said that the predicament, a character's predicament, is what drives the story.
Well, some of my favorite writers are writers like Raymond Chandler and Tarantino, who Tarantino talked about writing the Jackie Brown script where he said, yeah, every time Jackie told Ordell everything that was going on, I have to say it scared the crap out of me. I was really surprised. And I thought, oh, that's great. He's not even, he's just putting her and Ordell together. And the natural thing is that she would tell him.
Yeah, why not?
And he said about Inglourious Basterds, he said that in the beginning, they didn't get to Hitler because Hitler doesn't die. And then he realized, I saw Tarantino speak at the Castro Theater here in San Francisco when he screened Inglourious Basterds. And he said, I've never, ever restricted any of my other characters. Why would I start now? And I thought, what a beautiful way to think about it. Of course, that's the way it ought to be. Because then there's a real honesty and the writer's surprised and everybody's surprised. So I will tell you that I don't feel like reading the script is going to diminish my enjoyment of Django Unchained.
Well, because it's not about figuring out what the plot points are. It's about the experience of watching the movie and seeing how he assembles the pieces.
But your experience from does on change, the page. Knowing yes. oh, the yeah. annotations. And you're watching then almost like the adaptation of his script, yeah. his own personal adaptation.
And I feel like I'm learning how somebody improvises, right? He's going to be doing different things than he expected once he gets the actors in front of him. And I know that he loves improvising with actors and coming up with the actors' portrayal of the character informs him and how he directs them. He talked about that on Charlie Rose, about Christoph Waltz, about how Hans Landa developed through the course of shooting. Is that pipe something he always had? Mm-hmm. Or is it something that he brought because he knew the Frenchman smoked? Or is it his Sherlock Holmes calabash, like, ha-ha, I got you moment, right?
It's comically large pipe.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, and it's a great laugh. And that's actually the other thing that's one of the things I love about him is I love his use of humor and violence. Everyone talks about his use of violence. And of course we all understand that he's genuinely hilarious, but he uses both of those to make the other sweeter.
Well, and he uses it in a way, like we're so used to seeing sex and violence combined. You don't see humor and violence combined very much at all.
Right. Not where the things are genuinely funny and genuinely scary and violent.
Terrifyingly
violent.
They're
not campily violent.
Yeah. When Jimmy, the guy comes out of the bathroom in Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, Vince.
The first time, the kid, when they're in the,
oh, right.
With yes. the guy from Swimming with Sharks.
Alexis
I can't remember
Arquette.
His name is. Exactly. He comes out of the bathroom. He says, there's this moment of incredible violence. You're kind of waiting. There's a beat. And the beat is the whole thing, right?
Right.
That pause right there, if it just went straight to Jules and Vince pulling the guns and shooting the guy, the scene is just really violent and over the top. And it's hilarious and ridiculous because of the way it came together.
Mr. Wolf holding up that cup of coffee. Yeah. I don't know if you remember watching it in the theater, but that brought the house down.
Huge laugh.
Totally.
And everybody went and got a cup of coffee afterwards.
And I'm totally interested in seeing, there are laughs that aren't in the script that will be in the movie that are going to be awesome, right?
Mm-hmm. And how much of that is because the set designer put a comically large pipe on the set that day, right?
And you know, what's going to happen because Jamie Foxx is a genuinely brilliant stand-up comedian as well as a terrific actor. You know, he's going to bring a totally awesome stuff to it.
Or Leonardo DiCaprio.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I do have to say, I have this feeling. Have we talked about this, about the casting of Will Smith versus Jamie
Foxx?
No,
we have not. Because originally it was Will Smith cast Django.
Well, he wanted him to play it. That's what I read. I mm-hmm. could be. We could all be told.
The internet has told us.
The internet told me that Tarantino wanted Will Smith.
Not me, the other Will Smith. Just to be clear. Because it would be a completely different movie if
Wouldn't
I was playing the
Wouldn't that be funny if
lead.
You got a message on your machine?
Yeah.
So upon reading the script, I have this feeling, and if I ever meet Tarantino, I want to ask him, that obviously the story is a story of transformation. Django Unchained. Django mm-hmm. a slave. He's unchained. He transforms, right? And narrative arc is that he transforms. And there's a way in which I'll say it right out. I think he's a fantastic actor.
He's great.
I think he's done some absolutely brilliant performances. Ali.
It's a Pursuit of Happiness. I like Pursuit of Happiness.
Degrees of Separation.
What's that?
Six Degrees of Separation
is unbelievable and super amazing how great he was back then, even then. So he's a terrific actor.
Yeah.
He also happens to be sort of shockingly good looking,
mm-hmm.
like just really like looking at his face. And I think there's a way in which he is beautiful in that way that actors like that or just are, that was sort of intrinsic to that idea of transformation. That for a filmmaker, I felt like Tarantino wanted to use his beauty and the arc of him becoming the man instead of the slave as part of that. And I'm not saying that Jamie Foxx isn't a handsome man, but there's a way in which he's just not quite as pretty. Jamie, I'm sorry if you're listening to this. By the way, hi.
Yeah.
Second of all, hey, come over. I'll buy you a beer.
Big fan.
Big fan. But there's a way in which he's just not quite as pretty as well.
Excuse me.
But he might be a better
actor. Academy Award winner.
I know. You know, I'm also one of the ones that doesn't think that his Ray is his best role by far.
Well, the biopics have a certain, you know.
I loved him in Showgirls, though. Wait, not Showgirls.
No,
Dreamgirls.
Dreamgirls.
Sorry.
It's like Showgirls. Wait, no, he wasn't in Showgirls.
No.
No.
Showgirls.
No, Showgirls, not Showgirls.
Showgirls is such a masterpiece.
It rolls over. It's so bad it turns into a good movie.
Quentin Tarantino, knowing his movies, knowing his scripts, having read his scripts before, you felt it was pretty safe going in that you would get more out of reading Django Unchained, the script, before watching the movie.
Yeah.
Could you say that about any other script, movie director? Like if someone said, here is, you know, James Cameron's next movie or Ridley Scott's next movie, the script, could you go in that? Would you get that same experience? Or because it's a very special case with Tarantino?
It's funny. That's a good question. I mean, look, one of the ways I make my living is telling stories. I tell small little stories about science on TV, and that's very different than what filmmakers do on a macro level. But on a micro level, I as a storyteller, I feel like I could do both. I have read other scripts by some of my favorite directors before they were produced, and they did not diminish from the final product. You know, it's hard to say. I was just defending the other day that both Sixth Sense and Fight Club are better if you know the surprise.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
But Fight Club, definitely. I haven't watched Sixth Sense since I saw it in the theater.
If you watch Sixth Sense again, the first thing you'll think is, oh my God, Haley Osment is a goddamn genius.
Yeah.
Because the stuff he is doing in that movie that is telegraphing and responding to what's going on is incredibly subtle and amazing. It's beautiful performance, and you're missing all of it because you didn't realize that he's spoiler alert.
Yeah, I think they know.
This dude is dead.
Yeah,
that's the difference. You're missing it the first time around, but you can always watch it the second time around. That doesn't say that you can't enjoy both those movies.
Yeah.
You know, watching it the first time, not knowing.
Well,
the Swiss,
it's
and
funny.
Then rewatching it.
It's funny that you say that because my first response is, "Come on, a movie's made to be watched."
Yeah.
But at the same time, going back to Tarantino, watching the extra materials on the Jackie Brown DVD, he said, I really wanted to make a movie that feels to me like an Elmore Leonard novel in that you want to hang out with the characters, which is a great, beautiful jumping off point. Elmore Leonard is one of my all-time favorite authors. He said, so I wanted to make a movie that you could watch multiple times, and you just always felt like you were hanging out with Ordell, hanging out with Jackie and Max. And I have to say, I've seen Jackie Brown probably 10 times.
Mm-hmm.
Every single time, I feel exactly that way. He completely nailed that. So
it's true.
It may be that the second, third viewing of Fight Club and Sixth Sense are fantastic. By the way, I have a Sixth Sense story. I was hanging out with John Landis in LA a couple of weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
and he told me that his wife ruined the Sixth Sense for him.
Oh no!
Now John's wife is a legendary goddess of costuming, Deborah Nadulman. She did Raiders of the Lost Ark and all of John's movies, 1941. And they're watching The Sixth Sense, and they're like 20 minutes in, and she's like, how come Bruce is still wearing the same outfit? The costumer totally knows. And John goes, oh my God.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
But I mean, but it's that kind of stuff. That's the fun thing. When you go watch it, when I go watch a movie that you know there's a big Sherlock, when I'm watching Sherlock, the BBC show, not the Robert Downey Jr. Movies, when I'm watching those, the game I play through the entire movie with myself, and it's purely internal because I can't share it out loud or else I'll ruin the movie for the show for Gina.
Yeah.
The whole thing in my head is, okay, what is the secret code book, the yellow pages? Is it blah, blah, blah? You know, and I'm going through trying to figure out, trying to part it out.
Uh-huh.
I think you're ruining the movie for yourself at that point.
No, it's so much better because I never get it.
It's a mental exercise. It's not like you could control that.
Yeah, if you can't control it. But
well, I could control
myself,
it. I might go blind.
Maybe I'll have a swig of alcohol first, and I'll dumb myself down and just enjoy the movie for what
it is. But that's the thrill of the whodunit.
Let the plot unravel.
This is, I mean, it's a part of the subjective experience. You know, you're going to do what you're going to do when you're watching it. There's times that I'm always like, I'm watching something happen and I see someone jump an impossible amount and I try to note where they've swapped between real live action and CG animation.
And you just can't help it.
Actually, I remember being at ILM and looking at every month at ILM, they show all the completed effect shots that were completed that month of all the movies.
That's
got to
be a fun clip reel.
Oh, it's great. And so there's an editor there who just throws on some great music, like something from Inception or something like that. And then you get to watch like 40 shots from Perfect Storm, right?
Yeah, it's all the good parts.
Yeah, it's really cool. But there's... Sometimes they'll do a completion on one part of the shot, but they haven't done it on another. So I'm watching episode one, the Darth Maul fight scene when Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon are jumping, right? Mm-hmm. So now they're jumping from one thing to the next. They're jumping like Jedis, right? But in the shooting of this, as they're filming this, every time they had to jump, they would just jump like a foot in the air, and they'd jump, and then they'd land again. So there's all this fighting, it's like, hi, 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 and then they all just like jump a foot in the air and land again.
That's fantastic. It's ridiculous, yeah. The thing about the whodunit, though, is if they give you all the bits and pieces, if they don't cheat.
Yeah, but almost everyone cheats.
They don't always.
Okay, but here's
Fight Club doesn't cheat.
Fight Club
Sixth Sense doesn't cheat.
Right. But again, I would submit, and I will quote Raymond Chandler here.
Okay.
That if all the clues are there for you to solve the mystery before the end, it's not writing. It's an exercise.
Well, that's true.
And as Chandler points out in one of my all-time favorite essays, The Simple Art of Murder, which I quoted at length in my Maker Faire talk from last year, he said the story... isn't the story. It's not the mystery. It's not the murder. The plot of every mystery is the main character's search for a hidden truth. And that's gridded onto the analogy of whatever case he's solving, she is solving. So I would submit that
there is
a little bit of missing the point.
Oh, I'm ruining the whole thing. And on that note, we're going to sign off. We'll be back next week with another episode of Still Entitled. Thanks, Adam. Always a pleasure.
Thanks.
Norman, we will see you guys later.
Oh, by the way, that chick in the crying game is a man.
Oh, my God. Have you seen the spoiler t-shirt?
Yes.
299 people die in 300.
Oh.
Continue. Let's go. More spoilers.
Oh.
It's his father.
Darth Vader's his father, yes.
The ring, it makes it.
Handshot first. Wait, the ring makes it?
The ring makes it to the pits of doom.
Oh, that's not the ring making it. That's it losing.
Well, like, the Frodo ring loses. Everybody wins.
they're both the same person. It's his daughter.
My sister, my daughter, my sister, my daughter.